My name is Patrick Hickey. I'm the director of the Workers' Rights Center here in Madison. Yay. And at this moment across the country, groups like ours have gathered to stand together to say no to wage theft. In Washington, D.C., New York City, Ithaca, Bangor, Maine, New Brunswick, New Jersey, Miami, Athens, Georgia, Cincinnati, Columbus, Knoxville, Memphis, New Orleans, Northwest Arkansas, Detroit, Chicago, Minneapolis, Omaha, Houston, Austin, El Paso, Denver, Oakland, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, speaking in one voice to say no to wage theft. Workers' Rights Center just celebrated its 7th anniversary. And in those 7 years, our work has been increasingly dominated by a growing problem, wage theft. Every day, workers come in who report not receiving minimum wage, or being denied overtime, or having a final paycheck withheld, or having to work off the clock, or having a paycheck bounce. Sometimes it's a few hundred dollars, other times it runs into the thousands. We see janitors, dairy workers, drywallers, roofers, painters, cooks, dishwashers, cashiers, landscapers, temp workers, grocery workers, fast food workers, manufacturing workers, workers from the city, and workers from the rural areas. More often than not, we're successful in helping these workers get their money. And the Department of Workforce Development Wage and Hour Division deserves credit as one of the better state agencies in the country. But we know we're only scratching the surface. For every violation we catch, we expect there are 10 others that go undetected. We find that the workers affected often work at or near minimum wage, live paycheck to paycheck, and often don't have a lot of assets. So a missed paycheck can create serious havoc. It means not covering rent or not getting needed food and medicine. When a worker's check bounces, it usually comes with additional fees and penalties. How would you manage if you didn't get paid for a few months? We need to recognize that wage theft doesn't just hurt workers themselves. It has a cascading effect throughout our community. It hurts family members, community businesses, and those businesses that try to compete against employers who get an unfair advantage by violating the basic standards that make our economy just. To be fair, not all cases of unpaid wages are examples of wage theft. Sometimes there are clerical errors, honest misunderstandings of legal requirements, and particularly recently, the economic pressures of a bad economy has sent businesses into bankruptcy and closure. These situations, while disruptive, are usually easily resolved. No, our focus today is on the intentional wage theft by employers who think that they are above the law. Because of the failure, particularly at the federal level, these employers often get away with it. That's why we're working with worker centers, interfaith groups across the country to call on Congress to focus on this issue and commit energy and resources to reforming the Department of Labor. Back in 1941, the Department of Labor had 1,769 investigators covering 15 million workers here in the United States. Today, there are 750 investigators covering 130 million workers. That's 1/20th of the agency's previous capacity. The Department of Labor needs more investigators. And it also needs to revamp its methods to better serve the workers it's supposed to protect. But positive steps are being taken. The Wage Theft Prevention Act, House Resolution 3303, introduced by Congressman George Miller, Democrat out of California, in July 2009, amends the Fair Labor Standards Act so that the DOL can offer stronger protection for workers. The bill will do away with a statute of limitations that limits the DOL to 2 years to resolve a wage complaint. Generally, it takes the DOL 3 to 4 years. We filed a complaint with the DOL for Hacienda workers 2.5 years ago. That investigation is ongoing. So if it's ever resolved in the workers' favor, they won't see a dime. This important first step allows workers to file private lawsuits as well while the DOL is still investigating the complaint. The vast majority of wage lawsuits are currently filed by private attorneys, not the DOL. Interfaith Worker Justice and its 25 worker centers call on Congress, the DOL, worker advocates, and the business community to take the following additional measures. Educate and raise public consciousness on the crisis of wage theft. The greatest stimulus for the economy would be for all workers to receive their legally earned wages, which they would spend in their communities. Create meaningful wage theft prevention partnerships between government agencies and community organizations. Agencies that should be at the table include the Wage and Hour Division of the DOL, State Departments of Labor, OSHA and the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission, because bosses who steal wages are also likely to violate health and safety and discrimination provisions. And also county and municipal agencies that can help create innovative programs. These agencies should collaborate with community-based worker advocates, labor unions, congregations, and faith-based organizations and academic partners. Pass the national mandate requiring employers to provide workers with pay stubs that give complete information on the number of hours worked and how pay and deductions are calculated, and ensure meaningful enforcement of this law. Conduct targeted investigations of industries and companies that the DOL and community organizations have identified as willful repeat violators. Assess meaningful penalties that would deter wage theft and punish its perpetrators. Members of Congress are looking at new legislation to accomplish these goals. We hope to see legislation introduced in early 2010. Working together, we can stop wage theft. Thank you. I'd like to call Pastor Kurt Anderson from First Congregational United Church of Christ.
Thanks, Pastor. My name is Kurt Anderson. I'm the senior pastor at First Congregational United Church of Christ in Madison, and I'll be going on the board of the Interfaith Coalition for Worker Justice in February. I grew up in the Central Valley of California, and in 1960, when I was 15 years old, I got my first job, or rather my dad got it for me. He got a job for a friend and I working for 2 weeks picking grapes out in a huge grape field in the Central Valley of California. Now, picking grapes is back-breaking work. You have a knife, a hooked knife that you use to cut the bunches of grapes off the vines, but first you lay down paper trays on the ground, and then you cut the bunches of grapes off and you lay them single layered on the trays. And when you've got one layer of grapes filling that tray, you lay another paper tray down and you move on to fill that one up. You have to decide if you're going to work on your knees, which is very slow, or if you're going to bend down all day, which is incredibly painful on your back, particularly to two young 15-year-old guys who'd never done anything like that before. You get paid by the number of trays you fill. We were paid 8 cents a tray. We worked for 2 weeks, and I think we figured out at the end that combined we made about $1 an hour. Picking in the row next to us was a Hispanic girl, 14 years old, and of course after a few hours we were talking to each other. This was her third summer picking grapes. She was fast. Alone, she picked her row faster than the two of us could pick ours. We discovered that her family and the other Hispanic workers in that field were getting 5 cents a tray. There were a few other white workers working at the same time, and they were getting 8 cents. We were all getting 8 cents. When the owner of the field met us that first day we worked at 7 o'clock, when my dad took us out to the field, he told us that if we had to use the bathroom, this friend and I, just go up to the house, which was on the edge of the next field over. After making one of those trips on that first day, the girl asked us where we had been. And when we told her, she got this funny look on her face. It turns out that all the Hispanic workers were marched over to a row of ditches, first the men and then the women, and that's the area that they had to use. This girl's family had worked this owner's field for several years in a row. But during the 2 weeks that we were there, many of the workers who were brought out to the field were brought by labor contractors. And of course, they were paid a certain percent of the 5 cents a tray that the workers they brought out to the field received. I remember that very clearly because just a few years later, the local paper in that community did an expose on labor contractors in that area, and many of them were really unscrupulous. So this was in 1960. It was before Cesar Chavez was in the news. It was before the great boycott in the Central Valley. So what does this have to do with today? Certainly, 49 years later, we've solved these issues, haven't we? We've taken care of unfair, discriminatory treatment. Of course, the problem is that we haven't. In March of this year, 28 Hispanic workers were laid off of Taco Bell restaurants here in Madison. No real reason was given. The workers alleged that they were paid less than other non-Hispanic workers at the restaurants, that they were not paid overtime properly, and that they were discriminated against in other ways. Now, I'm a Christian. In the book of Deuteronomy in my Bible, I read this: "Do not take advantage of a hired worker who is poor and needy, whether that worker is an Israelite or a foreigner residing in one of your towns. Pay them their wages each day before sunset because they're poor and they're counting on it." Now, that's really pretty clear. Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior, and Jesus said this: "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul, with all your mind and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself." And when he was asked, "Who is my neighbor?" he made it very clear that everyone is our neighbor. He also said, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." Even though not everyone in my tradition understands this, my tradition is pretty clear that discrimination against workers in general and wage theft in particular is a sin. It is not only illegal, but in our tradition it is sinful. And it's particularly egregious when the people who are treated this way are the people who were called by Jesus, the least of these, my brothers and sisters. As Patrick said, recent studies have shown that wage theft, far from being a small or only a limited problem, is actually prevalent in many places across our country. So I would urge all of us to do everything we can to support our local Interfaith Coalition for Worker Justice and Workers' Rights Center, and to support the national effort to gain legislation to stop the criminal and sinful activity of wage theft. Thank you very much.